proud to be again. This week we have our guest lecturer will be Moshe Flumenbaum. If you follow Jerusalem Kosher News, he also has a column about Stams, if they throw in the Vivas. The Avatar has been explained to Rav. I can't give a great introduction because I know less about Stam than I do about Kosher. So the Rav is on his own. But Moshe, I know, has been in the field with jokes aside for decades. And Baruch Hashem was good enough to give us the evening and to share the wealth of knowledge, some of it, and to help us and guide us and explain a lot of things. But my, they have learned that the field of Stam today, unfortunately, has a lot to be careful about, and tonight we'll get an introduction to that, and I hope we realize that everything here is really Nogei L'maisa to our lives, Yom Yom, and it's important to hear. As L'chod HaMoed Asa, I'd like to present tonight's guest of Moshe Flumenbaum.
Tonight I'm going to speak about tefillin. Tefillin is an interesting type of mitzvah because it's not. It's two mitzvahs. Mitzvah tefillin shoyad, tefillin shoyosh. Two separate mitzvahs of the Tayag mitzvahs, which means that a person can actually be mekayim one without being mekayim the other. So that's one particular point. Tefillin are actually brought down 10 halacha Moshe Sinai. The word tefillin doesn't appear in the Torah. It's maramis from the word letotafos, but the word tefillin doesn't exist. There is no description in the Torah of what tefillin looked like. It doesn't say that they're black. It doesn't say what the parshas are. It doesn't say that they're square. It doesn't say that they have to be sewn. None of the essays of Devarim halacha Moshe Sinai are said black and white in the Torah. Okay, but nonetheless, there are 10 halacha Moshe Sinai. Now, one thing that many people have a misunderstanding of a halacha Moshe Sinai is a simple analogy. Okay, when you go ahead and you say, "Oh, I have tefillin," and it has 10 parts to it, 10 parts that are each one a halacha Moshe Sinai. So, what's the analogy? Take a car. What's the most important part of a car? What's the most important part of a car? The motor. Right? The motor's the most important part. Maybe somebody's going to say the chassis is the most important part because it sits in the chassis. Maybe it's the transmission because you don't go forward or backwards. For that matter, what happens if you don't have wheels on the car? Meaning, the reality is, just like a car, if you're missing a part, doesn't work. Tefillin, if you're missing a part, doesn't work. So whether you have no parshiot, which is pretty severe, or you have a letter that became invalid, which makes them puzzle, or whether the straps have cracked and are no longer black, it's the same difference. Same. Tefillin are invalid. And in fact, if you ask what the biggest psul or problem you ever find in tefillin, it's definitely going to be the straps. And if you ask what the second biggest problem of tefillin is that you're going to find, it's going to be the sewing. And if you would go ahead and tell me 10 minutes ago to name the two most important parts that you would be concentrating on the kashrus of tefillin, I make you a bet no one would even think of the sewing. Right? No, and very few of you would think that the biggest problematic area in Messias are the straps. Right, let's first understand what tefillin are made of. Tefillin are 10 components. They're parshiot, which contain two halacha Moshe Messina. One, they have to be made of cloth, which is the parchment. Two, they have to be written with black ink. So now, those are two halacha Moshe Sinai, and within it we have all our criteria or subcategories of the halachas of how one makes cloth, that it needs to be made lishma, meaning it has to be intended to be cloth. I can't take a piece of any parchment from any factory and use it, or pH paper. It has to be real cloth. It had to be cloth that was can, from the beginning of removal of the hair, the Gemara in Shabbos talks about from the original salting or preservation of the hide with the intent of making it into tefillin. Okay, that's how far back we start. You can make it with a t'nai that it's the Shem Kedusha Sefer Torah, which can also therefore be used for filling mezuzahs or a megillot, navi. Or you can make it belief t'nai, you know, which means only for tefillin. So there are, in general, most cloth day is made with a t'nai. There are places that you can get cloth without a t'nai, and it's made only for tefillin.
Is the t'nai considered a kula? How would you characterize the t'nai? Is it normative halacha
to make a t'nai? It's a normative halacha. The reason why it's a normative halacha is that of Hefsid Mamum, actually. Because cloth, in order to fit into the boxes, has to be a certain thickness. Now, when you take a hide, you have a percentage of liquid, you have a percentage of fat, and you have to be able to get rid of that fat and liquid and thin it out to be able still to be pliable enough to fit in. In fact, you see in Shulchan Aruch that the parchments, the sofer mumcha will choose that a thicker cloth for a shel yad should go, for a shel yad, or for the parsha shma in the parshas of the shel rosh, so that they fit in. The idea is that you need the cloth has to be done l'shem, with the intention of the mitzvah. Ink has to be made, it has to be black. Number one criteria, the machlok is whether you need to have it l'shmo or not l'shmo. The writing has to be l'shmo of it. But the etzem to halacha Moshe Sinai, one is the cloth, two is ink. And in tefillin, we go to the other end, the ritzuas. The ritzuas have, again, two basic halachas. One is how they're knotted, and two is that they're black on the outer surface. Somebody had asked me in one place that now that they have a new invention called double-sided black ritzuas, which the post can discuss a few hundred years already. Reality is that people need pranasa too, so they have to reinvent, you know, new chumras or new things also. So, you know, you can't have too many tainas because you didn't daven pranasa. But the halacha Moshe Mesinai is the outer surface of the tefillin have to be black. I asked Rav Shmuel Vosner in Shir once, Vus mein Schwarz? Now, when you sit with 40 people who are all, you know, Rabbanim in a shir, and you ask one of the Gedolei Ador a stupid question, you expect sometimes after you say it, like, I shouldn't have asked that, shouldn't I? Rav Shmuel Vosner said, Vus mein Schwarz? Schwarz is Schwarz. He says, Zugn, right? You gotta go ahead. Did you ever see light black? No, light black is called gray. There is no such thing as light. There's light blue. There's dark blue. There's chartreuse blue. There's royal blue. There's poel blue. There's all kinds of blues, right? There's all kinds of browns. There's all kinds of oranges. There's all kinds of all the other colors. Black is black. You can have a shiny black or a matte black, but it's black. And normally those blacks that are shiny and or matte have a coating on them to cause it to be black, matte, or black. But the base is 100% black. Now, interesting phenomena, black in the top of a can of tefillin paint and the bottom of the can of tefillin paint aren't the same shit, aren't necessarily as black or as strong, but they're still black. So, I asked Rav Hosner again, okay, black means black, plus mitis. He says, if it doesn't look black to you, then it isn't black. Meaning, if you look at it, and it has little teeny spots in it, and it's cracked a little bit, and you see the brown from the inside, or the gray from the inside, then it's no longer black.
When it gets old, it'll become brown. So the Gemara
in Nida talks about that the color red. One of the colors red in Dam is black. So like that. So there's an interesting Hasama Sefer that says when it becomes reddish brown, that's again the same shade, and that's why the Hasam Sefer is makel on that color reddish brown, which the Hazan Ish says no, it's already a different color and it's finished, not kosher. But the hezbin on that is different. The reality of why ink turns red, brown, and fades is because ink's basic ingredients are water-soluble natural ingredients. The basis of it happens to be ferrous sulfite. Ferrous sulfite happens to be iron. Iron mixed with water over a period of time and oxygen will oxidize, so therefore it turns red. It's called rust in the old world. Okay? But that's why it turns a rust color. And that will happen to parchments also. By the way, I'll go into it in a second about what can go wrong in these parchments, even if the bottom looks fine. So we now basically covered four points of Halacha Moshe Mesinai. The other ones all refer to the batim, or related to the batim and how the parshas are put in. Now the batim are made of three parts. Batim have a top part where the parchments are put into, that's called the bayit. The base, which is the square on the bottom, is called the tetorah. And the back part where the little loop is, where the ritzuas go through, is called the merbarza. Those are the three parts of it. A shalosh will have two shins on it. One of three and one of four. Why one of three and why one of four? Halacha Moshe Mesinai. You can have lots of drushes, but the bottom line is it's a Halacha Moshe Mesinai. Now, within the three and four, what happens if you put them backwards? Normally you have the three on the right side and four on the left side. What happens if it goes backwards? Not a problem in Halacha whatsoever. It's kosher. Remember, our tefillin ourselves, that we wear Rashi tefillin, there's the equal and opposite mirror image version of that called the Shemusha Rabba. His opinion was, it's not how you put the parshas looking out, but how you, the mirror image, how you're looked at. The same thing. It isn't like the parchments of Rashi and Vaya and with the location of Vayim Shemoa in Rabbeinu Tam, with its Vayaha and Vayaha are together, and even so, there's a sequel of the inverted version of it, the mirror image. So we have Shitas to be Yotzion. A job as a Sefer is not to see the tefillin or puzzle, it's to see that they're made kosher. We're to enable it, we're the functionaries to enable the mitzvah, not to disable the mitzvah. Okay, it's not supposed to be the UPS here. We're not the United Postal Service. Alright? The tefillin have to be, the shalosh has to be four separate batim. They're supposed to appear as four separate batim. If they appear as one bias with little teeny marks on it, in fact, it appears in the poskim that it may even in fact be possible. Because they have to be nikar batim. That's the Russian of the Gemara. The batim ideally should be separate. So you have, that's the component of that, whereas in the Shel Yad, you have all four parchments together on one piece in one box. There's certain things that you have to understand. We have a din of Rabua. What's Rabua? Rabua means it's square. Not a cube, but a square. Square as we look top down to it. So when I look down on a pair of tefillin, the top part, the bayit, has to be square. The next thing that has to be square is the base. And in between, the sewing has to be square. Those are Halacha Moshe Mesinai. It says, Tafsin Begidin. Gidin is the sinew off of a kosher animal, mostly a cow. because anything else is too small to be worth dealing with, but technically you can make it from sheep. They are taken, they are actually pulverized. They're dried and pulverized, and they're made into what looks like cotton candy. And then those fabrics are combed, and after they're combed, they're spun into thread. Now, if you think that sounds complex or archaic of hundreds of years ago, it's complex, and we still do it the old, good old-fashioned way with a good old-fashioned spinning wheel and spit. No glue is added to this. Okay? How strong is it? Gittin has to be strong enough to sew a pair of tefillin without ripping in the middle and to be able to keep it closed. That's how strong it is. Many people in strength of items, sometimes you miss people, they misunderstand the purpose of the strength that you need to use, work with. Anybody's going fishing, right? If you go fishing, you go to a store, you see that there's fishing line. One is 8 pounds, one is 10 pounds, one is 20 pounds, one's 50 pounds. If you're going ahead and fishing for trout that are weighing 2 pounds, you don't need the line that's so strong to hold a 40-pound tuna. The same type of thing. Gittin is made with a purpose. It has to be made with shmona. Mogen Avraham says it has to be combed and it has to be woven. The Shem Kedushas Tefillin, or the Shem Kedushas Sefer Torah. And only then, if it's done lishma, is it kosher. In fact, if it's not lishma, it's pasul according to the Magen Avraham. Last part is actually how we wrap the parshas together. Oh, you had a question, guys.
Just real quick, I missed. What is the material that's pulverized?
The gid, the physical gid of the behemoth, taken out of the lead. It's the a gid is the ligament. It is the part that holds the muscle to the bone. All right, and they take it out after shechita, or after the animal's killed. The animal has to be from a kosher animal. It doesn't have to be kosher shechita. The same thing applies to cloth and to batim. In fact, batim, you won't see kosher shechita in batim, because the animals used to make today a gossip pair of batim, which takes, by the way, one animal to make one bayit, meaning or shel yad, or shel rosh, is only from the top of the head and neck part of the behemoth. So you have a animal for the shel yad and an animal for the shel rosh. It's just like in a Sefer Torah, people ask me, how come the parchments don't match? It's because it took 62 behemoths to make one Sefer Torah. So it's hard to match them exactly, and there's no reason to. You just match the size of them. That's what we do. All right? The parchments have to be wrapped up. So Machlekes Rishonim, if there's it's wrapped up with a sar and then a matlis, or a matlis and a sar. And the later Rishon, the Or Zeruah, writes the following. He says, what's the problem? Min b'mino eno chutz. This is a klal we have in the Torah. Sar is from the same material as the cloth. We can go ahead, we can wrap the sar, put on a matlis, put the sar on it. Be yotzei everybody. That's the meaning of sofrim. We also learn out zekeli danveu from this dugma. At any time we have a machlekes within the poskim, within the rishonim, that if we can go ahead and combine it to do both shitas without interfering with the other one, that's considered a hitter. Now, go ahead.
I'm sorry, can you explain one more time what we're talking about?
When you wrap the parchments to put them in, that how they are wrapped is a halacha moshe Sinai. A halacha moshe Sinai is that they have to be wrapped with a sar, which is a calf's hair, we use a calf's hair, and a matlis, a piece of parchment around the parchment.
There's
hairs wrapped around it
and parchment.
And the mimic of the sofrim,
shall you
in Rosh, correct. And the minig of Sofrim is to do it according to the sheet of the Orz of Ruah, who will have the Sar, then the Matlis, and then a Sar. In order to be Mekayim, the Machlokes, the earlier Machlokes, whether you put first the Sar and then the Matlis, or the Matlis and then the Sar. So, Hidr Mitzvah within Tfilin is actually based within Halacha. What we try to do is to try to understand that we have multiple levels here. We have a halacha that is the ideal. We have the halacha, which is the minimum standard. And then we have everything in between. Okay? Example. When you have a machlekes, such as in Batim, the Rambam writes clearly that Batim do not have to be made Lishma. Okay? Shita Rambam. Rav Rishonim hold that Batim have to be made Lishma. And everybody today is Makbid that they should be made Lishma. We have even a very interesting, if you look at the Rishonim, you see a progression. For instance, we have the bias with the titoras. The old-fashioned pshutim, there were two pieces put together. The prima godim, later on in history, says, make it from one piece. Okay? Because it says that you should have a bias from one piece. And then it goes so far that we learn out an additional part. We should make it, it's possible to make everything from one piece. That isn't to say that if we had somebody come in, and I'll give you an example that we found. When I first became a sofer, the filler piece on the Dakot Batim, right? They used to get that in Tel Aviv in the leather industry section behind Takna Mechazit. And it used to be the shoe leathers that you used to put for the soles of shoes. Okay? Not very made lishma. Okay. Now, if you think about it, the person putting on filler is now putting on shoe leather for the part of that of the batim to fill in the height of the base of the batim. Lamaisa, as a rav, you have to say Rambam kosher, because otherwise you're saying all these hundreds of people are putting on filler like that, which we know isn't ideal. It would be possible, because we have a shita that's a bar samcha that we can hold by. So we have to always look at what it is. On the other hand, right, you have people who come up with these wonderful svaras who you start to ask questions. So going back to the double-sided black ritzuas, right? So if you're going to say, what's the milo of a double-sided ritzuas? So, the milo would be that if it was solid through and through black, that if it cracked a little bit, it would be black. That would be great if that was the metzias. But if you cut the ritzu on the angle, like, you know, a surgeon does, you'll find out that it turns gray, because it doesn't turn black all the way through. Because if it was black all the way through, the type of paint that's used would make it be as hard as a rock, because you... to get it through, you're using an alcohol-based paint, it would end up having dried out the leather, so it wouldn't be pliable around your hand. So it's a technical problem. So when I cut it like that, so maybe you want to say that what happens, you know, Rava in the Gemara explains when the ritzus were turned over, so he fasted because he saw the white side. So as one of the Dayanim said to me, he says, who said if it turned over and it's black on the inside, you don't have to fast either? Because it's still turned over. It's not the right way. But if you go ahead and you look at the Chidah says when he came to Eretz Yisrael, he asked all the Gedolim. And the Gedolim said not to use it. And if you look in the Mishnah Berurah, look at Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah says there, ein minik shalanu. So you start to see that people now create a new hiddur, per se, that Metzias doesn't hold out. I mean, it sounds nice. It's black on the outside, black on the inside, and white like an Oreo cookie in the middle. All right? So the Metzias doesn't hold. And they're able to sell it for that. So sometimes we have to just ask, what's a real hiddur, and what are we really trying to do with this? So when we have a machlokes, where those who are mechayev lishma, okay, where it becomes a machlokes, you go ahead and we say lishma is a hiddur. Where we have no machlokes, it's chayev b'lishma, and that's it. Such as the black painting, there too is black. Meaning, if you went ahead and took a marker, and I said, I'm just do, and I'm talking on the telephone or something like that, and I didn't even realize I was even touching up my tefillin in there because I was so busy on my telephone. The ritzu is a puzzle. The black isn't black because it has to be halakha moshe mesina. It has to be black, and that has to be done lishma. So either you have to scratch off that black and repaint it, right, or you got a problem. So there are various degrees. One of the important, significant points of this is that unless you know what you're going and getting, which most people don't, many of us are sold a sack of lotion, of that, because you don't really have an idea of the balance or the weights of what there is. And I once asked Rav Ozner the following question. Which is more important, Ksiva Yeshara or Tagiman Zabatim? So he said to me, Ma Nafkamina. He said, do I pay $5 more to the sofer because he writes it in a straighter line, therefore aesthetically it looks nicer, even halakhically, though it doesn't really make a difference, or is it more important to put tagim on the bottom of the shin? What was his response? He said, the fake chashid mishpat. That was a very important answer. You're asking a shaylin chashid mishpat. When you come to me and you say, hey, Flumendam, I got $2,000, give me the best you got. No problem, made my life very easy. When you go over to me and you say, I got $557, make me a pair of tefillin. Now, you made me your shliach in Choshen Mishpat to make you the best pair of tefillin that I go ahead. So now, is the $5 that I put in the tagim, on the shin, more important than the straightness of the parsha? Or is it better, do I have the machlekes of how they tie tefillah b'chutz bein bayis l'bayis l'fi Rav Ozner, or do I spend the extra money according to the shita of the limud of Rav Eliashiv? Or do I go ahead and I understand it that perhaps the better way of making it is that the prudish should be made shlish and the rest, totally prudish, or do I spend the money on full prudish? I go into hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shilas within machlekes the paiskim, and now you're asking me to build you a pair of tefillin based on the money that you have available to you. So in reality, you're talking about when they say buying a black item or something that we don't know about, well, in many cases you're talking about buying something that has so many points of halacha that if you go to your average rav, he'll tell you very frankly, I never learned it. We were talking on the way here. I don't know of any smicha that requires a rav to learn Hilchus Tefillin in terms of the technical parts, Hilchus Sefer Torah, in terms of the technical parts. If you're lucky, sometimes these Rabbanim will basically learn Hilchus Kriyas Torah and learn about various psulim that come up like that, or the rest is done on the fly. Now, I don't mean to belittle rabbis, That's because it's a very technical area. And lashonis are such that they change. Like if you look in the Mishnah Brura where he mixes the word ukitz and tag. So sometimes a tag means an ukitz and sometimes an ukitz means a tag. But if you don't have a masorah with doing that, you're not going to be able to follow it. The other thing that I try to tell people is, what does the person know, the seller, what does he know what he's selling? Meaning, you know, I use the example on the car here. I once had an engineer come to my house to look at problems after the Kablan was built the apartment. And I asked, you know, I asked him, what kind of Kablan does this? And he says, this Suga Petrozilia. He says, what do you mean Suga Petrozilia? He says, well, 2 months ago he was selling Petrozilia in Machane Yehuda, and now he decided he's a Kablan, so he's a Kablan, and he built like that. He says, many times you get a guy who's a really fine guy, really nice guy, and he needs a Parnassa, and we all need a Parnassa. And he's an Avreich, and a Choshev guy, and he has a friend who is a Sofer, and so he starts to buy and sell, and reality is he's buying and he's selling, but he doesn't know what he's buying and selling. And he doesn't know the nuances. I mean, you know, there's one fellow here who I know is a Sofer, and he gets these phone calls every so often, and he says, your vavs are too wide, this is too big, this is wrong, this is wrong. Because he has somebody looking over it. And sometimes they're inyan of points beyond halacha. Example. Guy comes to you and he says, I bought a pair of tefillin for $450. Okay, I open it up. Yeah, you bought a $400, $50 pair of tefillin. He says, yeah, but it doesn't have the tagei lamin aren't, you know, all done right. Kosher. He says, but it doesn't have this according to the Mishnah Berurah. He says, you're right, it's kosher. And it doesn't have this according to the Mishnah Berurah. He says, you're right, it's kosher. He says, will you fix it? No. The Sofer didn't write it originally. I'm not going to try to go ahead and be Mr. Ken trying to parcel your parshas on something that the Sofer never was mocked to put in to begin with. Now, if you're talking about somebody who is relying on somebody else, they don't know what they're doing, you end up having this problem that you can have people selling you things in goodwill, perfectly honest. They're thinking that it must be correct, and there's problems with it. There are hechsherim. Now, I'll give you an idea. One of my pet peeves is giving. The sinu business. So there's a din of course that getting made by goyim is you can't rely on it because rov behem is a tameim. Okay, somebody said to me, "Not today. Most people eat beef." No, that's not true. Most of the goyish world eats pork. There are more kilos of pork that are slaughtered than beef. Okay? But we live in our own Jewish world where we don't even assume that. Next thing is, why would a goy make it? This is, he needs parnassa too. I've had, you know, these two women coming from the Ukraine with those, you know, little like shopping bag, you know, suitcases with the zipper, with the, you know, color, now the nylon, you know, type of stuff, filled with hundreds of dollars, not hundreds, thousands of dollars of gift. Says you need three boxes. I make going from the Ukraine. They're not stupid. They know that people pay money for that, and what they get over there, they make a lot more money over here. That's one. Then you have wonderful hechsherim. You have a hechsher from one rav who gives a hechsher to say that it comes from a kosher behemah. He doesn't say if it was done l'shma. He doesn't say if they used glue. He doesn't say if they were used by a machine. He doesn't have anything to do with the process of it. So the fact that people would do it with a machine or using a loom, well, that's not magnanimity. I'm not giving an answer to that. I give an answer that the raw material was kosher for this use. So when you go to the guy and he says, you know, you have a hechsher? He says, yeah, it has a hechsher plenty, plenty. He says, did you call up plenty, plenty and ask him what his hechsher's on? He says, no. He says, why should I? He's a good rabbi. Just ask. So you pick up the phone, you ask the guy, and the guy says, wow, I didn't know that. You mean you didn't ask these things? He says, no, I just gave a guy a hechsher that he was making it. What he does with it is his business. Okay. Next, there is a, would you eat meat from a shochet? Right? And if you didn't have a tudah, would you eat meat from him? Why? You can have a goy shecht for you as long as you know he's not doing the Shem Elojazar or a cotton, and stand over him, it's fine. That doesn't apply to fixing the Sefer Torah, you know. But there's a din in Shechita that you can have that. There's no din like that in Sofras. You know, people go ahead and will call up and ask a sofer, how much does it cost to learn to take a comprehensive course, and how long does it take? 6 months? 9 months? Once a week for halakha, twice a week for halakha, once a week, twice a week to learn how to do the writing. You know, an hour and a half every day to practice. 3/4 of a year from here from now, you should be ready to take a bechina and be certified and be able to write. So when do we start writing? First you learn the halachas. Then you see an ad that says, learn to be a sofer b'ein zmanim. 2 weeks, you can be a sofer with a parnassah. Or, and I clipped it out of a magazine, scribal art scribe, become a halakhic sofer, option number one. Option number two, beginner's journalism. That was one of the universities who offered that. So today you have such a situation in Hefkerut that people will go over and they'll think they're a sofer. I was saying on the way here of a fine sofer who I know, Sephardi fellow, who became a, he's left Sofras because he has a yeshiva now, deals with, you know, with Chozer Betshuva, and he wrote Nezizis and even put Tagim on them. He gave them over to an Avrech to put Tagim on. Package of 30 Nezizis, each Nezizis was about $30, and the Avrech put on Tagim. 25 of which the Avrech who put on the Tagim passed that it was also to be metakin those mezuzahs. He didn't know what he was doing. Okay? We're not talking halacha, you know, Kabbalah, we're not talking about that. We're talking about this guy was now had a nezik of 25 mezuzahs. Well, you know, the real money. Because he gave it over to somebody who didn't know what he was doing. And if you don't think that there's places that do it, there's a yeshiva in the Bukharim that has these yeshiva kapana kids who are half more out of Yiddishkeit than Yiddishkeit, but they were putting on tagim and fixing Sifrei Torahs for a couple of sochrim. And can anybody stop it? The answer is no. When people go ahead and they check things and they give them out, did you ever see these people who come to the shuls in the morning? And check tefillin. Put up a sign. I come to the shul and I check your tefillin. No, morning, evening, you know, morning service. Get it back in the evening. I don't have to slap around looking for tefillin. Right, very good deal. No, the truth is that somebody gives you a pair of tefillin and you open them up and you take out the parshas and you check them. It's going to take you about 45 minutes minimum to check and go over the set of parshas. Take you about another half hour or so to sew up a pair of parshas. It'll take you to press the parshas, you know, together to close it properly another 15 minutes. Plus, you'll have to let the paint dry, which takes about 3 hours. Okay? So the first person you did it, nishkefel. The second person you did it, nishkefel. The third person, you're already finishing up that pair if you let it sit properly at 5 o'clock in the evening. If you took in 15 pairs of tefillin, how did you get the work done? There's a lot of times that we lie to ourselves or just don't make the same logical heshbon. I mean, after all, the guy goes ahead, he's a choshev avreich, I'm going to learn the halachas myself. I don't have a masorah of doing it, I can follow a book, I can read it myself, and I can understand it. Could you imagine a step-by-step course as a mohel and having your son be his first person? Being a sofer is a profession. It is up, it is a profession with subcategories and subspecialties. The fellow who writes is not the fellow who's trained to examine. Very, very few soferim actually train in batim. They're almost two different fields totally today. It's important whenever you go ahead and you deal with tefillin, realize that if all 10 components of the halacha moshe mesinai aren't done properly, if they weren't sewn properly, if the batim, the kesher wasn't tied properly, if the batim were not square, because that's a halacha moshe mesinai, if the batim parshas were not put in properly, how bad is it? Rav Shmuel Vosner's son, Rav Benzion Vosner, when we checked his tefillin, he had one problem with his parshas. They were put in upside down. There's a tshuva in Shevet Alevi from Rav Shmuel Vosner to his son saying that you received the schar rotzum a mitzvah avol lo kibaltet a mitzvah. Rav Shmuel Vosner and Rav Shmuel Vosner's son. Now, if that tells you anything of how it can happen, of a nice guy and a fellow, you know, giving it out to a good avreich who does the work, but nobody bothered to ask, do you have a tudah doing it? Do you have a, you know, where were you trained at? I mean, how many people would go out? Just think about it. How much would you pay to have a surgeon who is an expert save your life? Who needs your life? To save your finger. So you had a finger sewn back on. How much would you pay? How much would you pay for a mitzvah to make sure it was done right? Kosher git. $60 a ball. $60 a ball, $2 for a pair of tefillin to be checked. Git. Puzzle, treif, not kosher. $30 a ball. Works much better though than the good git, the kosher git, because it's smooth, it's glued, it's stronger, looks nicer. If you don't make sure of what the responsibility, many people think the responsibility is on the person who does it. Somebody asked an interesting question. Says, what was the, when can you ever have a situation of an oinus have a din of misa? You can't. It's halacha. So how did Avram Avinu, Adam Rishon die? How was he given a din of misa? She gave him the food. She gave it to him. So you know what the simple answer is? What was his tzavut? He had to make sure that it didn't come from that tree. Did he ask her? He didn't ask. Your job is to have kosher tefillin. You have to make sure you ask. Just like when you go to a butcher store, you look at a heksher, you have to make sure that the heksher is on the store. If it isn't on the store, or if you have a question, what do? You call the rav. No difference here. You do the same exact thing. Ask. Go ahead and ask. And if people ask why there's such hafkeris, it's because people don't ask. And as long as people don't ask, then there's no reason to go ahead and force the issue and make sure the people work properly. But as soon as people go ahead and ask, then you're creating the positive to flow in such a fashion that people will go ahead and say, yeah, I want a kosher pair. Yeah? You know what you're doing? Show me. Anybody who has it doesn't have a problem. Go ahead. You don't know Lishma. You don't know Lishma ever. Okay? But we have a Hazaka. But if the fellow, and I'll give you an example. One of the simple, three questions that we ask a sulfur. Davar Rishon. What's the first thing you say when you sit down? If he can't answer that, he says, you know what, he's not writing Lishma. Two, how do you mean the Kaddish Hashem? Straightforward question. I'm not into trickery. I don't want to trick the fellow. I want him to be a good sulfur. I want him to know, how do you Mekadosh Hashem? Is there a difference of being Mekadosh Yud Kei Vav Kei? Or Hashem Kel? I want to know that the fellow knows the Din of Kesidron. I need to know the fellow knows this. I can't tell you, and I can tell you beforeish, that we've already checked parshas with a computer, but Mishmeres Tam, that we saw parshas that were returned to a seichel who returned it back to us, the same parshas, because the machine, you know, squeals like, I got this one already, you know. And you can see the, where the mechikah was, where the parsha, where the guy went ahead and he erased it and he repaired it, broke a sidra. We saw that. We saw that. Yeah, there are guys who are schnooks and don't know, you know, we'll do, you know, a year's kesef and not year's Hashem. But you assume that the person, if he wrote and he was makbid in halacha, and, you know, there's a hezkis kosher, and we maintain the kesef. When I check a pair of tefillin, I don't tell you it's kosher. I tell you that I found no problems with it. If there's a problem, I tell you there's a problem with it. Right? I assume that when Rebbe Binyamin writes, he says on his parsha, every single one, when I sit down, Hareini, you know, Lichtol, Vishen, Kedushas, Tfilin. And that's what he writes. When he says to the Shem, the letter of snake, when he puts his pattern into the ink, he's going to say, Tel Lichtol Shem. You know,
so
we're Samech on Hazaka.
And technically,
you're right. You're right. There is no Meya Uchuz. I can't validate it Meya Uchuz. Okay? But I can do my best to the Ratzon to be able to get it the best. Meaning, if I go ahead and I follow proper procedures and plan, then the statistic odds that it's going to be correct. So if I went ahead and I checked a pair of tefillin, I assume that the sofer, the Var Rishon, if it looks normal, right, was mikdash the way it was supposed to be. Because if he bothered to write according to halacha, odds are he managed to try to do his tablets to do all the halachas. But if it looked like the chicken ran over it, or if it was scribbled type of thing, then, you know, then you don't have as much rachmanis looking at the parsha. Because you assume that if he wasn't machbid about this, 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 and this, and this, just like the sofer who wrote kosher, but he never put in the tagim that are lechatchila, but b'diyevish, they were left out, are kosher, you're not going to start redoing his work, you know, on that. So there are certain criteria of it. But that, again, we're the ones who have to make the hishtadlis of it. Look, I personally have a policy of making sure the people who I've been selling, I know who they are. I won't sell from anybody. Why? Because I got to know what... There's things in the Saviv that I ask. Right? For instance, I'm a bigot. Straightforward, I'll tell you like this. You want to write for me? I want you to go to a mikvah. You want to go to a mikvah? You have to write for me. I'm paying for it. I call the shots. I want things done according to this way. It's going to be according to this way. After all, I'm the one who's going to take it to Olam Haba, and they're going to say to me, Blumenbaum, why did you have this guy not do this or this or that? But that's my attitude of it. And that's what I express and I put out. But there's two sides. You have to know, A, what to ask, and B, you have to be able to get away with doing it. Ask questions freely, you know what I mean? You know, part of the things that... don't think that a sofer is holier than holy. They're not. They're people. They make human errors. They're human. You know, they're supposed to be working on a certain level. Okay? That's the goal of them. There's a certain muster that they're supposed to have. But I learned a long time ago, you can't be intimidated. You have to deal with what's in the metzias that's in front of you. My job as a shomer Torah and mitzvah to make sure that the tefillin that I put on is kosher. And I have to do what is needed to be done to do that. And there's no one should be embarrassed ever to go ahead and to say to a person, you're writing the parashas, do you have a tudah? Is it valid? Go ahead.
I just wanted to expand on that question specifically. You have an obligation to have them check. You just said somebody gave you...
Do you have an obligation? Yes.
That's the question.
Yes. The din is mefarish. You see, by Hilchos Mezuzah. You move into a place where there's a Shomer Mitzvah there, right, who says, I checked the Mezuzah. Bang. You still have to check it yourself. You can't be Somech on Yenim Chazakah. And like that. So, where does it come in different from this? You were obligated to make sure those children are still kosher. Okay? The fact that things that you cannot be mevarer, okay? Which is a whole new plane, that's something which is out of your domain, you can't do. But whatever within your domain, you have to do. Go ahead.
Is there a hechsher that somebody offered to buy their grandchildren film? Can you tell them, yes, I'd like not to go to a specific home valve. Is there a hesher that you can say, I want them checked by this organization?
You mean, can one go ahead and say, look, I want them checked, computer check, I want done.
No.
Listen. Computer check, I want to make sure it's done by Mishmeres Tam. The clock, I want to make sure that it has the extra either of the Das Eder Haredes or from Shammai Gross, and I want the DL to have Nahari's DL like that.
I
want
to make it much simpler. Somebody says, I want to buy my grandchildren film. Can you say, I want to check by, is there a Mishmeres Tam that actually will say, these film are kosher? Not saying how good they are, how bad they are, but...
At the moment, okay, the OU refuses to get involved in anything of kashrus or tefillin mezuzahs. Refuses. The Eder Haredes will only give it into certain components of tefillin. They will not. Do they not give a hechsher on any parshiot whatsoever, whether it be tefillin mezuzahs or sifrei Torah? Mishmeres Tam does give a hechsher on mezuzahs. They give a shirut of computer check, which they take achrayas for. And Rav Shammai Gross gives a hechsher to one store who meets his criteria. Rav Lando gives a store his criteria to one store and everything that they sell. I'm based on his criteria, which, by the way, Rav Shammai Gross's criteria and Rav Lando's criteria are virtually identical. I mean, virtually. And interestingly enough, other than the two, two quote-unquote Michiganists who agreed to it, and all the time that they want for it, nobody else is interested in even applying for them, because they're requiring things that are accountable for, including giving over keys to your store and codes to your alarms. Like, I'm really worried about, you know, if Shammai Gross or if Landau walking in the middle of the night and stealing from me. You know what I'm saying? But they come in. The reality is that in Bnei Brak, the Heksherim there that are given on basis, meaning they're on base level. They don't go they're more material done. They don't go into the nitty-gritties of it. They don't go into psakdin. So it's a different level type of thing, other than with Landau. With Landau is totally comprehensive in Bnei Brak. Go ahead. Okay, what basically said is, how does a person find out what he's really buying and what it's really worth, and what is, you know, and make sure it's even kosher for that matter? But first of all, so there are, if you consult with people who deal with it, right, you can actually get your answers. Because you can go to the various poskim who deal with Stam, who can guide you. Meaning, tomorrow night, I have an appointment with somebody who's bringing me 8 different sobs of different sofrim for a Sefer Torah. You know, this is what this one wants, this is what this one wants. I can show you emails that I get that will ask me, you know, what's the difference between this cloth and that cloth? At the moment, for various reasons, and I'm going to say something that's going to be very unpopular with all the Hecherim, but they'll probably put me in a harem anyway. Giving a Hecher on Stam is a non-economical entity. You make money off of potato salad. You don't make money off of making a Heksher on Stam. In order to have a Heksher on Stam, think about it. It's not an assembly line that's talking about products where you check the product coming in, the raw materials, and what's going out, and the assembly line going through. The person, first of all, in the qualifications of checking the kashrus has to be one level over the people who are doing the work at least. Okay? So if you're talking about an examiner who's a certified examiner, then you're talking about an expert certified examiner who has greater experience to be able to check if he is missing a point in halacha because he doesn't have enough experience. My father, Alav Shalom, had heart surgery, had a mitral valve operation 15 years ago in the States. Now, my brother goes ahead and asks the professor, how many of these you did? 15,000 in the last, 20 years. Very good experience. That's why he's head of the department. Okay, go ahead, we have the surgery. My father, Baruch Hashem, did very well. And he gets back to the ward, and we see these balloons, and everything goes ahead, and everything is wonderful. Best of luck, Dr. Berman. No, Dr. Berman was the guy who did the surgery with the professor. He's the one who opened up my father. He's the one who did the bypasses. He's the one who took the veins out of the leg to do the bypasses. He did all the surgery. The professor, he came in for the 5 minutes to change the mitral valve. Okay? No, Dr. Berman finished his 5 years at University of Pennsylvania. Tomorrow he's assistant director of heart care in the University of Wisconsin or Minnesota. One of those three, one off to. Okay, next guy comes in. This little guy comes in. He says, hello, I'm Dr. Such and Such. He just finished Temple University Medical Center. Now, he's obviously a bright guy because he's the University of Pennsylvania Center, which is a top medical center. And the guy in the bed next to my father is going to have the same exact procedure, except this is number operation one that he's going to solo on, except for the 5 minutes that the professor's going to go into. So just because you're certified as a heart surgeon and you've done your stage and you've done this, there's a day that you have to be do your own first time. So if you're going to certify somebody, you can't have a guy who's just taking the course. You need a guy who's been doing this for a long time to do it. Now, even if I spot check randomly, so let's say I spot check randomly, I'm going to do 10%. That means you need one Rav who's an expert who's going to work full time to check over 10 Baal Megiyim. Now, the same thing occurs with Basim, the same thing occurs. So you're talking very high level intensive training, expert rabbis versus a standard Mashkiach who goes through a mini course. So it's a very uneconomical way of giving Hefsherim, and that's why Hefsherim at the moment in Stam don't have any, aren't there. That's one. And two, it's going to raise the prices. So when you have somebody come and say, how good is it going to cost me an extra $100 to have this person certified, that's outrageous. Because unless you have the understanding of what's going to be involved in it, then do you get the appreciation for it. But then you still have an economic side. The guy has to sell it. So, there's a certain trade-off here. So, anytime you have that, it's not so simple. But the best way of doing it is you go to a Rav who's in the Inyanim and sit down with them. They're happy to do it. Just like a pharmacist who's happy to go ahead to tell you, please take this medication at night and this in the day. That's their job. Go ahead. Checking the filling should be twice in 7 years. It's brought down in the Shevet Kahati, it's brought down in other poskim. It's also brought down if you go to a person who's not open and close the box, you shouldn't get bringing and be opened by it. Most stuff shouldn't be opened by it. If you don't know how to open and close the box properly, then the din is you don't get them checked. Straightforward. Most people don't know how to open and close a properly sealed pair of filling. If a sofer is sewing it up properly, and then he is closing it properly, and he's pressing it, a simple sofer who is not trained as a batenmacher cannot open that pair of tefillin without breaking his knife or hurting himself. Right? And when you have such a pair of tefillin, they don't want to open it because they can't open it. And they can open it, but they can't put it back together sealed again. Because unless you have a press to do it, and the plates to do it, and the mechanics to do it, it's not going to happen. That's why many times when people complain, I got my fill-in checked, but it didn't seal it like it was brand new. I mean, sealing it like brand new or sealing it when it's 20 years old is the same thing if you know how to seal. It's a special occupation. Realize, there's a sofer, he's the writer. There's the Megia, he's the examiner. Different occupation. Different training. The guy who learns how to write learns the lepakila of how I write. The guy who checks learns all the deviations in all the various scripts, whether it's Beis Yosef, which is used by Ashkenazim, Ari, which is used by Hasidim, or Nusach Sfard, or whether it's Velis, Sfardi. He has to know the deviation of the Temani. He has to know the difference between Minag Sez Daron Vitzon. That's what an examiner needs to know. Because there's a Nafka Minah both in minimum kashrus or in Lechatchila Hidr between them. So I can tell you what you got. Okay? Then there's the Batim person. He has to be certified in Batim. He has to know to check, how to be able to check the Rabua, open the Batim, close the Batim, put the parshas in, press them in, make sure that they weren't, didn't get glued in because you put in a little bit too much glue so you glued them in permanently. There's all kinds of damage that can be done by that. Make sure the knots are put on properly, that the knot should sit properly on the shayad so it touches the bias. Those are all things that he needs to know. But batimacher slash painter dash sewer, right, one doesn't think of as the sofer who wrote the parsha. That's three different occupations. That's what it is today. Go to some place that has it built in. They give you a loan of their filling. Come back a week later, and the work's done properly. Okay.
I think tonight, for my limited knowledge, tonight is both, at best, was an introduction. I truly not just invite you all, but encourage you to sign up to the emails on Jerusalem Kosher News. Baruch Hashem, not that long ago, I got Rav Moshe to join the staff. There's a separate page, a column on Stam. Much of what the Rav discussed tonight will appear in an article coming out, believe me, on Wednesday. It'll be out, so you still have time to sign up and get it. There's constant updates, constant bulletins. This is an active field. It's not something I heard it and go to sleep. All right? He is happens to be one of the Meshuggahs that has the certification from Avshalmai Gross. He can't say it, but I can. And I really mean it. Tefillin, it's our essence. It's what we do as Yidden. You know, I saw it from my personal experience. I told Rav Moshe, he knows already. I had my bar mitzvah. My father was shown bought the best tefillin I had to buy. At age 15 and change, I had them checked and found out I had Hebrew photocopies. They weren't even on parchment. They had newspaper inside. That's what I got. And they came with plumbers and seals, and so I'm a little sensitive to it. And this exists today. I've seen it, and it's out there. And just like I try to make people less with kashrus, I'm not a Talmud Chacham, but I know what's out there, and I know that not every guy with beard, a payas, kippah, sugar, black, I cover all the bases, whatever it is qualified to know all the aspects. You need to find a hashra, just like I tell you with food. You need a hashra for tefillin. You need a hashra for mezuzahs, and there are hashra out there. You need to find them. I've learned recently. You buy a talis. It has an Eidech Haredi tag hanging off the talis, or if you buy tzitzis in the store, it has an Eidech Haredi tag. The tag is on the tzitzis, it has nothing to do with the tying, it has nothing to do with the spinning. You buy talis, it's actually on the talis, it has nothing to do with the tzitzis that were tied. So this is like one kind of a store, and I don't get commission, but this is, someone has to say reality to know it, but there are stores like this where they only buy talis with no tzitzis on it, and he makes sure that his staff ties every talis, that you shouldn't have any chashash that someone buys a talis that some goy in southern Tel Aviv tied a tzitzis and parceled the whole talis. But you'll never know, because like we said, you don't know kavana. So I think it's wise you have a Moed Asher, Baruch Hashem, who really is Binyanin. Rav Malinowitz knows the deal. He's on top of these things. So you're lucky you have someone right at home to discuss with, to ask with, to guide you. And I hope you'll take advantage of it. Next week, I think, my BlackBerry went out to an urgent repair, so I lost a good part of my mind with it. I think next week's speaker, if I'm not mistaken, is Rav Yaakov Gerwitz, who's really one of the veterans in Eretz Yisrael of Shatnez. He does a fantastic presentation. He's not dry. He's bringing samples. He's bringing stuff to show. And this is Nogea for men and women alike. This is Dvorah Midoraita. This is just like Tefillin. This is not a Chumah. And I encourage you to come in, to bring your friends and tell them about it. Shukar.
Thank you. jury wanted to keep it.
Gentlemen, if you notice, we left in the middle of the suitcase.
Yeah.
Probably 09, we left the south of the juice and fucking little bit.
So interesting. Why did you come to the movie? Anyway, because my wife knew the label. And it says wool and nylon. No, no, it says in Hebrew.
Overshot.
And I think probably in Hebrew. And then she sees it in German. It said wool and lace. And they translated it and then
they put wool and what the fuck.
And then that's where that one is. What is the neighbor?
The restaurant, so that is a date, that you sure. It's not a date.